Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom. And we are doctors of physical therapy bringing you the body tips and PT pearls to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in.
Hey, what's up, everyone? So I'm Dr. Dom.
I'm Doc Jen.
And we are going to be diving into probably our favorite PT pearl and one that people ask about the most because I just so happen to be sitting here with the mobility queen. And many of you who follow her on Instagram know that she has amazing mobility routines and also just brings the education down on what you can do at home to explore your own mobility. So what is mobility?
Yeah, let's dive into that. I guess I do have a whole program on it, the mobility method.
Oh, there's a whole method for mobility? This is madness.
And I think it's really important to, you know, kind of put our spin on what mobility is to kind of make it easier for people to digest and understand and why they would want to implement it into their lives and into their body. I think that's the whole point. So my first thing that I like to bring awareness of mobility is that usually when we're talking the difference between flexibility and mobility, flexibility is going to be more of that passive range of motion. So it is getting into a stretch without having any resistance in or tension in your body. So like for gymnastics, because I grew up as a gymnast, we would put our foot on one stack of mats and then be in a split. So
that's crazy.
So some people are active and trying to fight and resist against it, but for the most part, you're supposed to be.
That would be me.
Oh, there was a lot of teammates like that. For the most part, you want to be relaxed and be able to gain passive flexibility. Yeah. And then when we're talking about mobility, then it's then being able to take this range of motion in a split and make it active. So that's where you think of going into a split jump or going into a leap. Now I'm actively pulling my legs into this split position. So how much active range of motion do I have? So that's really where people, you know, now there's camps, right? Of like only active mobility in the body, only passive. I don't know who says only passive, but you know, there's these two camps and I think we just want to help to bring awareness of those.
Totally. And I think that's what we tend to do in general in a lot of topics. It's either this or this, you know, active or passive or nature or nurture. And the answer is always both and then some, you know, so there's always more to explore. Are there any, like, I know that you show me lots of little things that people can explore where they can see the difference themselves right away, specifically with the wrists. I love the one that you show where it's just like, okay, if we're going to do a push-up or something, then you need to get your wrist to 90 degrees on the ground, right? And so everyone's like, oh, yeah, I can do a push-up. My wrist gets to 90 degrees.
But sometimes it hurts.
Right,
or it's
but sometimes,
in pain.
Oh, but my wrist then hurts after I do push-ups for 10 days or, you know, I get into a workout program with a lot of push-ups. So one thing that people want to try out, right, is we start here with fingers bent, right?
Yep. So you fingers start with bent, forearms together.
Forearms together. Oh, gosh.
That's already hard for a lot of people.
This is as far as I can get. What are you doing to me? So, and then after that, we are going to extend those wrists, right, to try and get to that 90, right?
Yeah. So if you're listening, you're trying to get your forearms together, you're trying to get your hands together in a fist right in front of you, and then keeping your palms together, so keeping those wrists together, you're going to just try to slowly start to let those hands fall away from each other, and then nice and slowly open those fingers until they become straight, and look at the angle of those straight fingers.
It's impossible.
Because if they're not at a 90 degree angle from the forearm to the hand, that's when you can say, okay, I understand now that pushing into a passive range, because right now you're going to be pushing into a passive range, but I'm active because I'm pushing and I'm pulling and I'm doing, you know, active work and load, because now if I go into a plank or a push-up, I'm loading that passive range of motion. like insane.
Yeah, you're putting most of your body weight through it. Exactly. Or a lot of your body weight through it. So
that's where obviously like now I get cysts because I'm getting buildup of fluid in my wrist, or I'm getting tendons that are starting to pull in different directions, and I can get pains and all these different strains and pains and things can start to happen in the wrist. And it's so common, especially I taught Pilates for 6 years. And believe me, that was a common complaint because we're on our hands so much. So it was constant modification. But now that I understand it, it's so simple. If we just think of, okay, obviously I'm loading the joint at my wrist in a range that it doesn't quite tolerate. So it obviously is going to start to build up fluid tension pressure in a way that my body cannot handle.
And if you notice, when I specifically, when I do that wrist exercise, when I get to the very end, I start to shake.
Mm-hmm.
And my body just kind of starts to shake and revolt. Like, what the heck are you doing? And what are you trying? Why are we going all this way and supporting with our own muscles? And that's because it's telling you your nervous system just isn't as used to getting out to that point and supporting through that point. So that's a great way to know if you're ready to do those push-ups and what you might, what pressure you might be putting into the wrists to compensate for some of that active motion.
Right. And I just want to point out for anyone watching, like, he looks like a battered human. This is a tree. Okay. It's
okay,
not.
Okay. She's trying to blame it on the tree.
He climbs a tree every day. And I just have to point that out. So anyone on the podcast, yes, you can go to YouTube and look at how battered Dom is. We don't have a cat or anything.
Well, it's the whole, we're isolated with the virus thing. And I'm like, ADHD child, so I need to be up trees every day.
Every day. Okay, anyways, back to the point. So it's this, I love that you brought up the wrist because I think this is a great example.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, we want to gain that active range of motion, right? But in order to gain that active range of motion, what's happening? Is it only the joint? Is it only the joint that needs to gain active? So yeah, I can keep pushing and activating and opening and opening and opening. But I would say, before you just start smashing into, not smashing, but over-activating and maybe flaring up muscles and tendons that are overworking, you have to say, why might they be overworking? And it could be the tension and the tightness on the opposite side.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I love this idea of, like, now we get to bring in both parties of a passive stretching flexibility for the muscles on one side so that we can actively get those muscles and tendons to open so that we can free up the pressure at the joint. So it starts at a passive level. So one thing that I always show, right, is just going back and this can be done like if your hand is on a table.
One hand at a time.
I don't like this way as much because the fingers still stay bent.
Yes. True. Well, I just showed a bad example.
No, it's not a bad example.
That's why
it's a great way to start.
It's
a great way to start. But I like to have the fingers flat because your flexors of the forearms do extend all the way out to the tips of your fingers.
So if you do it, try to keep those fingers straight. And if you're just listening, what we're showing is just passively kind of pulling those fingers and that wrist back into...
With an arm straight.
Yep, with an arm straight. So you should feel that stretch kind of in the front of your forearm.
Right. And so holding in that, and now it goes back to how long should we be holding a stretch, right? Because most of the time, who has time to stretch?
Everyone has time to stretch.
Everyone does. No one makes it a priority.
Yes. We all have time to stretch. Not a lot of us choose to stretch.
Yes. That is the number one thing. And
so how long? How long do we need to hold these stretches?
So I would actually go back to... I will credit Andrea Spino, Dr. Andrea Spino. He's a chiropractor up in Canada. And he has what he calls an FRC method, which is a functional range conditioning. And I actually learned at his course that he talks about 2 minutes all the time to actually get, well, I believe we're tapping into the nervous system as well when we start to hold that long and we're telling the nervous system, hey, you're cool, you're safe. Like, you know, after you pass a minute, you're like, oh, I can actually breathe and I'm not dying in this position. So you're also telling the tissue to release tension.
And I think that in those 2 minutes, there's a lot of conditionals also. There's a lot of qualitative or the quality of how we're holding those 2 minutes and what we're doing with, you know, our mindset or our breath during those 2 minutes. is almost just as important in my book.
Oh, yeah.
We can hold a stretch for 10 minutes, and if we're bearing down and gritting against it and pushing into the pain and trying to reach our toes, we might never get there, and we might actually create more tension in those muscles and make them want to release less because our nervous system's a little scared to go there.
Mm-hmm.
And a way to take control of that is with those nice, long, low breaths, long exhales, and it puts us in a more relaxed, safe place in our nervous system. And when I hear this 2-minute mark, I tell a lot of people, if you're waiting for the 2 minutes to get up, that's not the right mindset. We should be taking breaths and counting 20 breaths, and then the 2 minutes will be done after about 12 of them.
Yeah.
And if you're more focused on that, on the breath rather than the destination, it's not about a destination. It's about a sensation mm-hmm. when we stretch. I didn't make that up. I saw that somewhere, but I don't remember. It sounds too smooth for me to have made it up. But so really, yes, two minutes is great. I would also make sure that you're really focusing on your breath and focusing on what's happening in your body while you're doing that and trying to keep yourself feeling safe.
Yeah. And then once you get into that, like, okay, now I can feel that I can release that tension. I can get into more range. I can, and especially when you start to increase the time under tension, like a stretch is still tension. A stretch is still load. And it's just, it's a first step into loading the tissue. So if we can start to increase our time under tension just through that stretch, then we help to, change the way that that muscle, the tendon, the cells all the way down are going to be responding to that range of motion. So that's why it helps. We're not necessarily taking a tissue and just elongating it. We're changing the way that the brain responds to that tissue and the way that the cells interact together.
Something that I love to share with people, and it's kind of, I don't know, a little gives you the heebie-jeebies to imagine it, but when someone's under anesthesia, or asleep for surgery, you can take their leg and put it up over their shoulder. The muscles can lengthen to that point. So when we talk about lengthening and shortening muscles, we're not actually physically lengthening and shortening anything. We're sending different messages to tell that muscle, hey, we want to rest at a different resting length.
Yeah.
It always has those different lengths available.
Exactly.
It's just a matter of whether we can go there.
Right. So let's go back to the wrist example again. Then, okay, I'm holding that stretch, opening up my flexors to the front of the forearm and fingers back behind you so that you can melt into that stretch a little bit more, right? And I'm going to hold that for about 2 minutes. Then what do I do after I do a passive stretch?
Then we actively support in that range.
Mm-hmm. And there's so many different techniques. I mean, I've shown many through my page at Doc Jen.
Should I show one quick right here?
Which one are you going to show?
I mean, it's just very easy. Again, if you're on your knees and you've been stretching this way, then you can put your hands here mm-hmm. and just kind of press up, keeping those fingers nice and strong so they're not completely breaking. Resting into their extreme ranges. So keep active through those fingers and through those wrists. And then just kind of press up here a couple times and lean into that full wrist extension and then press up. And then you'll start to feel when you get into those extreme ranges and activate, you're like, ooh, that's a little different than I normally feel in push-ups.
Yeah. And we're just, again, starting to, now we stretched the tissue. We got into a new passive range. Now we're going to say, okay, now can I load the tissue and can I still make it feel safe within that range? And so when we start to build up this passive and this active capacity around the joint, then we really start to open up that joint space in a healthy way, rather than just overworking one side of the joint versus the other side. Now we're actually starting to load both sides of the joint. And I think that's what's most important. And so it's not just passive or active, it's both. And it's not just one or the other. Like, it's not just, oh, if I'm in a hunch position, I only want to work my back, right? No, we still work the chest. We still work the front. And it's understanding how to elongate and lengthen those tissues in a working position. We can get into this so deep, right? But the basis of mobility is that we find the foundation within your body. And I think that's what people need to realize. And that's why I have a whole mobility method, because if you want to go work out, you want to go load your body, you want to go do other things, you have to see where your body is restricted first. So within the mobility method, this is just a little plug just because we're talking about it, there's a whole self-assessment. Mm-hmm. So there's 23 different movements that you can go through on your own to really assess what's happening within the body. And then from there, you can choose the exercise necessary. Now, here's the thing. When we're looking at the foundation again, I like to guide it back into like a baby. And this mm-hmm. is, if we look at a baby, they come out healthy, right? Their bellies are going to be rising and falling. They're obviously first when they come out, they're crying and they're sympathetic because they're like, what the hell? You just threw me out of my...
Where am I? I was just in this safe, cozy home.
Yeah, exactly. My fluid and my belly. But after all of that experience happens and the baby's more relaxed, you see their belly naturally rising and falling. Mm. So that's why we like to get to foundation of breath. Then as they progress and they age, a natural thing for a baby to do is along the developmental milestone is they start exploring their feet into their mouth. And so they start to have this natural elongation of the hamstrings, of the legs, of the hips, of the back. All these...
The pelvis starts to move.
Yes, the pelvis starts to move. Like all these areas start to increase in mobility. And then they will start to learn how to crawl and walk after that. Mm-hmm. But if we go back to these progressions of even how we are as a baby, like it just makes sense. Like, why am I loading tissue and starting to walk before I even know how to put my toes in my mouth? And again, we're not saying that you need to put your toes in your mouth again, because we don't have the same dimensions as a baby anymore as we age.
You're gonna find me trying to put my toes in my mouth later in the room.
But I'm just get like, this is if we just look at the fundamentals of us as humans and how we naturally go through life, like go through these stages again. And this is why other people who are my mentors as well, we talk about rolling, we talk about different patterns within the body as well, which we can get down into later.
I was going to say, we'll do that in another podcast.
Exactly.
We don't want to jump right into rolling right now.
But that's why building upon your foundation and mobility is going to be your foundation. I would say breath first and then mobility, and then you can start to increase your strength and load a lot more into those ranges.
Yeah, what is it? There's like the progression. Is it stability, mobility, or mobility, stability, controlled mobility, and then skill?
Yeah.
It's like this neurodevelopment pattern where you find stability first, then you find mobility first, and then you find stability, and then string that together to make it stable throughout that whole mobility.
Yep.
And then we progress into these skills.
Yeah.
And I always remember Connie Bogard, shout out to my neurodevelopment teacher.
Oh, nice.
She was like everyone's little, you know, mother hen in our program. And yeah, she would always come back to that.
Yeah.
That's the progression, whether it's a baby learning or whether you're coming back to it later in life.
Exactly. And we lose it because we sit in chairs all day long, or because we find our one pattern that we move through, and that's natural.
We're just not feeding those other patterns.
Exactly.
Doesn't mean they're not there.
So we are adaptable humans, just like we adapt into becoming tighter. We can adapt into becoming more mobile. And one last thing that I think we wanted to end with is just the joint by joint method. So this is brought to you by Gray Cook, and he just makes it very simple to understand. So this is a broad overall general outlook on the body. But in general speaking, we have these areas that should have more mobility versus more stability. And if we go down the body, it alternates. So the neck more stable, the upper back more mobile, the low back more stable, the hips more mobile, the knees more stable, the ankles more mobile, the feet more stable, the toes more mobile. And if you think about that, the areas where people usually get more pain are
the knees, the low back.
Yep. And the neck.
Yeah.
The areas of stability. And so if we just start to say, okay, well, instead of just strengthening what is hurt, what if I actually started to look above and below and say, oh, well, is my upper back even moving very well? Are my hips moving very well? Maybe that's why I'm getting low back pain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I love that, because throughout my own journey of movement, I started to really realize like those are some of the places that I have a lot of pain.
Yeah.
I have had issues with both my knees coming out of playing college football, different issues with low back symptoms and whatnot. And thinking back, and once I got into PT school and started learning some of these different things, I'm like, wow, I've really been compensating where I lack mobility to find stability at those places.
Right.
And I think the first time I heard you say something like that, I was like, wow, yeah, I'm kind of flipping that because I lack different stability in certain areas and mobility in other areas. Mm-hmm. And so most of this podcast has been about a single joint.
Right.
And in reality, we don't operate as single joints as humans. Mm-mm. And although, you know, we have a lot of muscles pulling around the wrist, there's also impact through the elbow and up through the shoulder as to what happens down through the wrist, and same in your lowers, and the lowers affect the uppers and yeah. all around. So again, when we're talking, and this is where I come back to Jen's mobility method. Yeah, you may have shoulder pain and know that you need to do some mobility work on your shoulder. Great. Why else? Why has that shoulder been taking the you know, that stress and that extra and developing that pain? Generally, there's something else throughout the body that may not be quite doing its job either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's why the mobility method has two breath classes too, to help you understand, because it doesn't have to be complicated. There's only two on there because, again, it does not need to be complicated. It needs to be effective. So if you can start to create that more efficient and effective pattern within the body, and then start saying, oh, is my shoulder taking on more pressure because my upper back wasn't moving well, and my diaphragm wasn't moving well, and my inner core wasn't stable, and so then my rib cage couldn't move as well with my shoulder blade in my shoulder. I mean, that's why we also can't just say, oh, you have shoulder pain? Let me tell you what to do about it. Because it can be coming from so many different areas. But that's why just start with the foundation. Look at your breath, figure out what's not moving well in your mobility, and do both passive and active.
Absolutely. And if you didn't get a few amazing mobility tips from all that, I don't know where else you should go to look. But that was
Doc Jenfit.
True. Doc Jenfit. She'll have a lot more information there. But that was amazing. Thank you for giving us some of your pearls in this PT Pearl. We're so excited to bring you guys more PT Pearls. Please just give us any recommendations or things that you want us to dive into and talk about as far as our perception and opinions and the science and facts that we do know, and how we package them all together to try and help you understand how to bring these tools to find your optimal body.
So today we're going to give you a little background on exactly who we are, how we came together, why we're doing this thing called the optimal body. I mean, I know the first episode we talked about what the optimal body is truly about, what to expect, all of that. This one is really diving more into our own personal stories of who we are as individuals, who we are as a couple, how we believe in this stuff.
Yeah, how we got to this point.
Then maybe why I'm working on you. We'll dive into that.
Why you're working on me? Well, I think it's important to, like, we're not just telling the story about how we met because we're gushy romantics.
Well, that too.
That is a for sure as well. But for all the people out there, like, the reason that we really want to dive into this story is because we think it's so important as to why we ended up meeting in the first place, why we jived so well together, but why we do what we do, and why we feel like we're so successful and happy doing so in being PTs and in working on and serving people. It all kind of comes from the place of why we live life as human beings and what we want to bring to this collective universe and team here on Earth. So, yeah, I don't know. We've known each other about a year now, which is crazy.
Almost a year.
Yay. And do you want to dive into where exactly we met and how that went down?
She
always kind of lies when she tells the story, so I'll fill in.
I do not. Okay,
the real part.
So let me discuss. So I was coming off of a conference where I was at from like Monday through Thursday. So it was like, I mean, and it was like stuff is happening every night and it was a lot. And I knew I was stepping into this other event called Graham Sessions for physical therapy that I was asked to speak at. I've never been to it before, and I was asked to speak on it at it on Saturday. So I was going to fly in on Friday, and I was just exhausted. In my head, I made up that it's a very, I mean, I know it's a very small event that you get kind of get invited to. And it's really around people very involved in the APTA, which is the American Physical Therapy Association. And so in my head, I made up that it was just a bunch of older PTs.
Just a bunch of old fogies.
And it was going to be boring. And why am I even going?
And she nailed it on the head. It was awful. I'm just kidding. Graham Sessions is like my favorite conference.
It was actually really fun. And I, yeah, so ended up going Friday, meeting up with the group later.
Mm-hmm.
Austin, Texas.
Yeah. And this is a group that I know a little bit better and have been a little more involved with. And so I noticed Jen roll in. I'm like, who is this? Who is this girl or whatever? And she rolls in and woman, girl. Okay. Don't be so sensitive. But yeah, who is this woman rolling in? And she was hanging out with a couple of the women that I'm close with. And I'm like, okay, how do I not know her? And how do they know her? And just put off a good vibe. You know, I read energies and stuff. I'm a hippie like that. And she just like was speaking to everyone in the room. Couldn't hear what she was saying, but she just had such a good energy about her. And then I see a bunch of other people trying to do a pistol squat. For those who may not be aware, that's like where you grab your foot and then
you don't have to grab your foot.
Just if you're trying to show off and if you fancy, you grab your foot and then you go into a full single leg squat. And a few other people tried to do it. And then Jen just like grabs her foot and goes into this full squat. And I'm like, oh my gosh, who is this person? And so
that's my mating call.
Yeah, I said that I always say that she started throwing the mating calls across the room first, for sure. But yeah, and it wasn't until after dinner, we sat at different tables, but we got into this other bar and I noticed that she liked to move, to dance, because there was some music playing. And it was a little slower music, but then we got into another bar and she really liked to dance. And I love partner dancing.
Well, that was really fun for me that you actually wanted to partner dance, because traditionally, if men want to dance with you, it's like, you know, bump and grind kind of dancing.
Yeah, the classic bump and grind, which is just like unfortunate that that's, I don't know, I always say our generation is losing this lost art called dance.
But it was really fun and super unexpected. I wasn't so tired. Again, I had been at a conference morning and night like the whole week before, so meeting up at dinner, going out to dinner, I was not really feeling going out. I was already falling asleep literally at the dinner table, which I was not at the dinner table next to you. I saw you and I was like, oh, he's cute, and then I was sitting at the dinner table with everyone else and falling asleep and not really caring. But then me and a couple of the girls walked out after dinner. We're going to head back to the hotel and go to sleep. And it's Austin, Austin, Texas. And there's music playing all over the place. And so as we get out on the street and all of a sudden I just hear the music, I'm like, it's just automatic in my body that I start moving. So I was like, well, ladies, should we go out for just like a little bit
of a dance, because you were supposed to talk the next morning at this conference. Like, that's the whole reason you were there, to speak. And
so we ended up going out. First bar, like you said, slower. I was again falling asleep.
Mm-hmm.
And then someone came up to me and was like, "We're gonna go to a hip hop bar." And I was like, "Sweet, I'm following you."
Right, get me out of here.
And then I saw you followed, and I was like, oh, "Okay, let's do this."
Great. Yeah, and that's when the mating dance moves per se really kicked in the hip hop bar. Because if none of you have ever seen Jen, old Doc Jen Fit, bust a move on the dance floor, she can move. And I always say that if a woman can follow and can move well, the guy can be the biggest half-ass lead in the world, and he can look like he can dance well. So I absolutely love dancing with somebody who I know is how to follow and knows how to communicate through, again, I always talk about dance as like this universal language that you can just talk to each other and have an experience and listen to each other flow and move. And again, movement's something that's super important to me. And communicating with that movement through dance is something that is super, super important too. So it was just really fun to kind of like have this first experience dancing and connecting and moving and noticing that she communicated back to me. And I could feel her ebb and flow. And everyone says that the man leads a dance, but I always say, like, we more so provide a platform that we can then communicate on. And then I would notice that Jen communicated super well. And I was doing different moves and dancing in ways that I hadn't before. So I'm like, oh, this is really cool. Like,
well, and then what I also noticed at the night is that you didn't know who I was. Some of the PTs knew who I was. Some of them didn't. And so it was also, I liked that, you know, you were seeing me and meeting me for exactly who you saw in the moment, not who you saw on the gram.
Yeah, that's true.
And I was going through some stuff on the gram, so which we'll dive into a little bit, but you know, that's, so it was just, it was refreshing. It was cool. It was transparent. It was open. It was in the moment. It was present. And then you ended up walking me back at like 2 a.m. No, it wasn't that late yet.
Well, we ended up talking until like 2 a.m.
Yeah, we ended up talking until 2 a.m.
Because we're like, oh, you have to talk early. Like, I can walk you back to the hotel, whatever. And just got back to the hotel and sat in the lobby and talked. And this is probably like the most important part of this whole story and podcast, is because it's on this talk that, like, you know, you dive into all these areas of life and conversations when you start to meet somebody and you start putting together this picture of who they are and, you know, how they fit in your puzzle of life and, like, all the things she kept, like, saying about spirituality and family and her values and learning and loving the body and valuing, you know, movement and breath work and everything. It's like we just hit on so many points and struck lightning and jived and had kind of these same values and foundations. And I walked away from that conversation like, whoa.
Yeah, that was really surprising to me. I mean, me being in Southern California, I get to see a lot of, in LA, I get to see a lot of the new things that are coming out about. But then when I'm walking with you and talking and you're saying how you're doing Wim Hof and you're, you know, going to different conferences and you do breath work for yourself and you do breath work with your clients and you connect on this neurological level and emotional level and all of these things, I'm thinking, well, I know we do this in LA. I didn't know that people in Minnesota were also catching on to these things. And maybe that's me being super naive.
Well, you know, the world's small. And even people in Minnesota have access to some information that comes from
100%.
The coasts.
100%. I don't even know a lot of therapists who would look out.
Totally.
My sphere.
And in getting at that, I think we get to a huge, like, pivotal point about why we connect so well. And it has to do with why we do what we do and why we became PTs and why we treat people and what we're thinking when we're working with somebody and they have pain and they have a story that they need to tell. And I think that's one of the things we connect on the most, is like really just the service bit to people and the service bit to the human whose story that we have the privilege of impacting or who's walked into our office and like how we approach them. And I think that's where we connected, because you and I both approach people by, you know, talking to them about their life, talking to them emotionally, understanding where they are as a person, as a human, where they need to be received in the head and in the heart. And then we talk about their back pain. Then we get to that. And it's really unique when you find people who approach humans that way.
Yeah, as a whole person rather than a body part. And, you know, just the fact that you were open to exploring other methods that are outside of conferences we would go to for PT, or, you know, just continuing to open and broaden your mindset in that. I think I just really, really liked and appreciated, and you traveled and you just like you hit on so many of the innate core values that I love and who I am as a human. So when we talked until 2 a.m. and then you left the next, or, you know, whatever, you left that night, and I was just like, oh my goodness. And then the next day after I spoke, I ended up changing my flight.
Extending your flight another night.
Because all of the people were so cool, you know, and I just had a different perspective and wanted to go out with everyone.
That's the only reason.
Yes. And FYI, like, we didn't kiss, like, nothing happened. We just spoke until 2 a.m. and connected on such a cool level. And that was really cool.
Yeah. And I love when people ask, like, hey, how'd you meet? I can always answer, dancing. Because it's kind of cheesy, but it's kind of funny. And again, it sounds like voodoo energy, but I just love the connection I felt when we danced for the first time. And the communication you can feel from somebody just to know, like, yeah, I'm here. We're doing this. We're putting together an awesome picture during the song, and no words spoken. You know, that was a fun, unique connection the first time around.
And even when we started walking back to the hotel, and we were completely walking in the wrong direction because I thought you knew where we were going. You thought I knew where we were going.
Nope. We weren't staying in the same hotel, so but I thought she was walking. We were just talking. We didn't care.
I have zero sense of direction. But then as on the way back, and then we stopped at a random salsa club, and that was super fun to just, we were like the only ones too who were actually dancing, and that it was just so fun. Everything about
we start dance floors. It's like a life motto. I need a bumper sticker that says that we start dance floors.
Yeah. And then fast forward.
Yeah, I mean, fast forward quickly to now. I mean, just under a year later, and we've dove in so quickly, and we've hit all these milestones in a relationship that some people may say are a little ahead of the general pace, which, yeah, if we live in a world of norms, I would say so too, but I don't subscribe to a world of norms in medicine and the way I live my own life or the way that I approach the health that other people are trying to find in their lives. And so all I knew is that as long as we were staying true and authentic to ourselves and communicating that with each other and telling each other how we were feeling and how things were going, and that all still continued to feel good. Like, I didn't need to know anything else. And that exactly that happened with every step along the way. And we just said what was important to us and what we needed to know to make sure that this is something that we wanted to keep around and keep in our lives. And it all checked out. And it did. And we just did it. And it was a really crazy thing. And your system wants to rebel and say, no, this is too fast. This is, you know... But it just felt too right. And listening to that instead of the outer voices is much more important.
And I think it's just so, I think it's important to know that we also just continue to stand in exactly what our truth is, exactly what we wanted in partnership, in personal life. Like, there's no holding back, especially with just communicating from Minnesota to California. And finding out how we were going to see each other, how we were going to talk, how we were going to connect, and making that stuff happen, and really being true in asking for what we want in relationship, what we want in life, what we want in partnership, and not holding back, and not being afraid. And I think that was something, at least for me, that I used to tiptoe around a lot of, like, oh, let me get to know this person. Let me really see. Oh, I don't know. Like, maybe I don't need to bring this up yet. Maybe this is too soon. And whatever things I had around it of, like, oh, scaring someone away. I was just over that. I don't care if I scare someone away. I don't care if I, because I get to know that this person is going to be in my life, and I'm going to dedicate time and energy toward, is really going to the next human I want in my life. I want in my life. Like, as my partner. And that's exactly what I was looking for. And I wasn't afraid to ask for it. And let it be known. Like, let it be known that this is what I want.
Yeah, I've heard few different times people say things about like, oh yeah, I love being unconditional. I'm like, that's kind of crap, because love should come with a lot of conditions up front, and then you should speak exactly to what you're looking for in the person that you're going to spend life with. And love means that it comes with things that you're not going to exactly agree with, and that you're going to need to work through, and that you're going to need to, you know, talk about. But at the end of the day, as long as you keep that communication open and work together, walking side by side through things instead of hitting head to head on things, like, it's going to be okay. And that's just a choice at that point, whether you're going to put that work in. So as we kept diving into things, I know that that was one of the biggest things for me, is the more open and honest you just stay about those things up front, yeah, you avoid a lot of things from festering or holding any sort of resentment towards anything, because you just spoke it out right away. And
exactly.
It's when I see how we do those things that continues to impress me and say, wow, we do have a partnership that will allow us to work through whatever and allow us to work through those tough things.
And that was most important to me too, coming from, like, in 2018, I got shingles on my body, knowing that, like, literally I can remember saying, it feels like there's a little girl inside me who is just screaming to be heard and screaming to be seen. Like, that is how I felt. I felt not living into my truth, not being seen, not feeling fulfilled in truly what I wanted. And that's on me, obviously. Like, I put myself in whatever situation I did. But at the same time, it was such a lesson for me to say, I get to speak my truth. And I want to also know that my partner gets to speak their truth, and that gets to be heard always. And so you and I both came into meeting each other at a time we weren't looking for partnership at all. And
it happens how they say it does when you least expect it.
So crazy. So we're like a walking cliche.
These people know something. Where do all these cliches come from?
It comes when you don't expect it. When you know, you know.
Exactly.
All these things. Anyways.
Throw up.
So really jumping in and saying, okay, listen, I am in a healing path of my own, like my own personal journey. I have been burned. I've been betrayed. And I'm walking out of that feeling renewed and also healing. Mm-hmm. And I made that very known and came to you and said, listen, if I have a healing journey to walk, because there was a time when I had met up with someone and she told me her own experience and with my past relationship, and it just triggered a lot for me. And so I remember getting on FaceTime with you and just saying, and crying and saying, you know, I have a lot that I'm healing, and there will be triggers that come up for me, and in no way do you have to walk this journey with me. And you were absolutely amazing as always, and just held space in that moment and said, you know, like, I don't exactly know exactly what you said, but essentially.
It was so good. The words are escaping me.
Essentially, you said, you know, that this isn't something that's scaring you away, and you're here to hold space for it. And that is exactly what you did all of 2019. So I just commend you for your masculinity in that. And because that, to me, is so strong of a man to not take another's triggers and make them your own, or make it something that you have to fix, or you just held space for me to heal on my own and do my own work, and, you know, not make it okay for those things, but also not make me wrong for it. And so there's so much appreciation that I have for you just being the human that you are, and in the allowance and the acceptance and the openness and the compassion that you had for that, because you allowed me to come on my own journey so far. And I truly, like, feel like a new person, and I got to do that with a partner. And that's why I say too, like, you don't have to wait until you're ready. Like, when are you ready? We're always transitioning through life things, But if you can be open and honest and real and confront like those triggers and just say like, hey, this is what I'm experiencing right now. I don't want to, but this is what's coming up for me, and be able to truly speak into it. There's so much space and freedom in the body for that as well.
Yeah, I think, well, thanks, babe. I think that we need to get in a habit of stopping apologizing for the baggage, the quote baggage that we're bringing into relationships. Because if we're always apologizing, or like you said, waiting for that right time to bring it up, or waiting for that, or ashamed of what they might think or might say, then you're always going to be squashed by those fears and those, that guilt that's not going to allow you to live in the present, and not going to allow you to figure out if that person is the right person to be there to hold space, to allow you to keep doing that healing. Because whether you're 15 days or 15 years out of your last relationship, there are probably still things that will come up that will put your gut and your system back in the place that just feels rotten. Again, whether it's in the last minutes or the years ago that thing, something happened. Like, so just understanding is something that I was not very good at for a lot of my life, was when something happened or when something came up for somebody, not taking that on or trying, or taking offense to it, or what did I do to make you feel this way, you know? And so thank you for saying that. I've been very good about that. Sometimes I think I could still do better and work on it. I know that I heal
and work.
Right? And I know that I've, in the same way, had a lot to heal on, especially with my move from Minnesota and some big changes in life that this has meant. And you understanding that has nothing to do with how I feel about you or how I feel about our future together, but how it just is this rock and this change in my system, and how it has brought up triggers for me as well. So I think our message there is this whole, yeah, don't wait, bring the things up. And if the person's there and ready to have those conversations with you, it gets you to a place where you'll know, or you'll know if that person's right to be in your life, whether it's in a capacity of a relationship, a friendship, a peer mentor, a confidant, whatever. So be your most open, authentic self, and you'll call really cool people in your life, whether it's a relationship or otherwise.
And you'll release so much tension and stress from your body. And I know that's a place that we both heal from, or we work from, is really allowing people to be open. Like I used to say, when I would treat a lot more, I would have at least one client a week crying on my table. And that's not because of my intense pressure for my hands.
Not putting them in too much pain.
It's not that. It's really allowing the space as a clinician to just open space. Not that I'm trying to evoke anything. I'm not trying to ask questions. I'm just opening a space where they feel comfortable. If tears were to come up, if experiences or situations that they need to talk about were to come up, it would allow for that. Because you and I, like, I know we both treat as a whole person, and that involves everything that's happening in life as well. And I know for me, like, shingles came out of an emotional time. And that is a stress in the body. Like, I'm so fortunate I didn't have pain with it. Yeah. I just have the scars from it now. But I didn't have pain from it. And I don't have chronic pain in my body, even though I have scoliosis, I have thoracic outlet syndrome, I have, you know, I have elements, different things in my body.
Totally.
But it doesn't have to be that way if you are real and honest with yourself first on what you're feeling, and the people in your life for who you need to open up to.
Yeah. I mean, as you were talking about with your shingles, one of my greatest shifts in how I approached my own health and the health of people that I served as a clinician was through physical anxiety symptoms, you know, and then feeling that, and you're like, wow, that was one of the things that rocked me the most, along with what I think were more post-concussive symptoms. And I'm, you know, at some point we might dive into that more, but that's where I really dove into how I treated myself in energy and in breath, and, you know, mentally, how I centered myself impacted the way I felt just as much as what I did physically or what I did with my diet. So then I realized how when you just talk to somebody a little bit, listen a little bit more, and get them to breathe well in a session, the changes you can see in people's demeanor and pain levels and energy levels is pretty incredible.
Oh, yeah. And we don't have to dig so hard into tissue, you know? So it's kind of nuts.
Yeah. Definitely.
We'll dive into all those different things as we go through. I do want to say, like, one of the most impactful moments for me is when I had, just to like really put this in perspective, I think for people to like visualize, is when I had a trigger and I went quiet, because sometimes I just go quiet because I don't know how, but like I know it's my own trigger, so it's nothing about you, but I don't know how to speak about it yet because it's my own stuff. And so I just go quiet. And one of these times when I had gone just quiet and you could sense and feel that I was not okay.
Yeah, it's hard to hide that energy.
Yeah, no, especially for me. I don't hide it well. I don't think you do either.
No, not. And I don't try. I don't think I'm good at it.
And, but so we were like kind of cleaning up, getting ready to go to bed. And I was just like in the mode of like, I'm just going to clean, go to bed. I'm not going to talk right now. I don't have anything to say. I don't know what I want to say. I don't know what I'm feeling. Like, this was all the things that it was just like a whirlwind of like in my head. And I remember as we're like kind of getting ready for bed, you turned on a song and then you just grabbed me and danced with me. And then I just started to melt a little bit. And I was like, I'm sorry. I am feeling a trigger right now. And you said, I know that, like, you don't need to talk. When you're ready, I'm here. And then I melted more.
I got to remember this one.
But it was like this isn't something that goes on the gram for everyone to see. This is real. This was true. This was your heart for me and the space that you held. And that is what I saw night one. This is why we're here today. And, you know, and why we decided to do a podcast, because as physical therapists, we're very emotional beings.
Yes, and we are accepting of how those emotions impact our health.
Yes.
And it is where Jen and I have connected in a way that understands that in a relationship, whether it's that's the relationship with yourself or mm-hmm. the relationship with your partner. Mm-hmm. If there is something that's not right in that relationship with yourself or a relationship with your partner, it can have drastic impacts on your health. And for
drastic.
Us, we have found, yeah, so drastic. And for us, we have found that the biggest benefits to our health and our journey have come through doing the work and finding our most authentic and truest self. And that comes through a lot of things that don't quite happen physically or in the diet, slightly differently.
Yeah.
And those are some tools that we're really going to hope to bring to you guys in this podcast.
100%. So I just want to go through a couple tools each, like for personal journey, healing, growth.
I need to come up with some tools right now.
Yeah, you do. Sorry.
Oh my gosh.
Unpacking some stuff. So for me, one of the most impactful things, besides just the allowance and the acceptance of like, as I go through my own personal healing journey, I'm not going to feel okay every day. I'm not going to show up okay every day. And I'm going to be in complete acceptance of whatever that looks like, whether it's anger, whether it's emotion and crying, whether it's jealousy, whether it's like, these are all real emotions that if I judge them and push them away, it only comes up more. And so being in like super radical acceptance of every emotion that I had, rather than making it wrong and making it bad, just being in the acceptance and seeing and having compassion for where that could be coming from, and then journaling. And that was like one of the biggest ones for me, especially like Christine Hassler gave a little prompt of, I don't know if I'm going to remember exactly what it is, but basically it's, I forgive myself for. And so even if it's like, I forgive myself for feeling angry right now, and allowing yourself to just right on whatever that emotion is, or whatever you need forgiveness for yourself for, and acceptance and compassion. Acceptance, compassion, it's like, even when we're talking pain, if that's the first place you can come to when you're having pain in the body and your body's just trying to talk to you, that is such a huge first step to be in the acceptance and the compassion that stuff happens to the body and it's okay and it's your body talking to you. And same with emotions, and same with healing, and same with whatever you're going through. Like journaling, even though you might feel resistant to it, just try it. It's so huge.
Absolutely. And I think exploring practices like that, especially in journaling, that was going to be one of my first ones. So you stole that for
sure.
It just helps you to reflect and to be slightly more conscious. And yeah. Not every journaling practice is going to resonate with you. But if you try 50 of them, you might resonate with two or three really, really well. And once you find those two or three and do those consistently, the things that you'll start to pull out of life that either will help you optimize or help you eliminate things that were not optimized in your life will be pretty great. And so during a journaling practice, or instead of a journaling practice, something that I love to do is a gratitude practice. Mm-hmm. And everyone talks about doing some sort of gratitude practice. And what I love about a gratitude practice is it's a great place and a great state to start in the morning. Mm-hmm. And when you wake up in the morning, imagine two different scenarios. When you wake up and you grab your phone and you see you have three notifications and you've snoozed your alarm twice and your system's freaking out already. I'm sure I've given some people anxiety just listening to wake up, look at the phone. Ah, you know, instead, if we wake up, look out the window at the sun and say quietly to ourselves, man, I'm thankful that I just woke up and I get to see the day again. Man, I'm so grateful that I get to get out of bed at 4 a.m. even though it's super cold outside, and take a nice warm shower to prep my body. Whatever it may be, when you start your system in that place, you're setting up your system for success rather than some of the alternative morning routines. The other one that is just a quick mindset shift, it doesn't require any writing things down. You can write things down to really hammer it home. And Jen and I just talked about this not too long ago, but is reframing excuses as opportunities. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we as humans can make excuses for anything, anything in the world. And instead of making that excuse, make that opportunity to say, oh, it's so early and it's cold outside and I don't want to go to the gym. You know, say like, hey, I'm so fortunate that I have the ability to get in my warm car and drive to a gym to find a way to dive deeper into my body today. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever it may be that you can say in your head or write down, or make that your practice, doing two of those a day. Those, I guess, would be two quick tools that you can take away today.
I love it.
Yeah.
And nothing that we just said involved the body or movement.
Yeah, it's crazy how that happens. Huh?
But I promise when you start there, you're going to start to just feel things differently within the body. And we'll continue to dive into the body and nerd out about it, because that's what we do. Mm-hmm. It's truly what we love.
Thank you so much for listening to us on the Optimal Body Podcast, where we're going to continue to bring you the PT pearls and guests that will help you find your optimal body. Now, head over to wherever you listen to this and leave us an honest review, and head to docgenfit.com/podcast, where you can find all the show notes.
Don't forget that we're going to give away a free month to someone who subscribes, leaves us an awesome review, and lets us know what they want to review on the next PT Pearl. So we'll be choosing that once a week to get into a free month of the Optimal Body membership.